A podcast of the cinema.
My name's Dave White. I'm a film critic. Your name's Alonzo Duralde. You're a film critic.
Yep.
You are my husband. You are... That's the most important qualification.
Certainly.
That you need to do a podcast with me.
Sure.
You are also a Renaissance man. So many other podcasts that you share with other people. You're Polly for podcasts.
Hardly a Renaissance man.
Who shot ya? Breakfast All Day.
Mm-hmm.
Deck the Hallmark.
Mm-hmm.
A Film and a Movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? Yeah, that's it. Four others.
Yeah.
It's exhausting just listing them, honestly.
Oh, poor you. How tiring that must be for you to list them.
It's really, it's one more thing to think about. Can you smell the garlic, by the way?
A little bit, yeah. What's happening?
Good. Dinner's happening.
And what is that going to be?
Oh, it's a surprise.
Oh.
You won't know until it's right in front. I'm going to blindfold you.
It will involve garlic.
I'm going to turn this apartment into one of those restaurants that's like pitch dark. You don't know what you're eating.
You're not doing that. That's when you stab a fork in your cheek.
It's when you. I've never been in one of those places, but I just assume.
It seems like the worst.
It seems terrible. Like how. I don't know how you get the food from, like, how do you find the food on your plate?
Yeah.
Like, what? How do you know you've cleaned your plate? I have to clean my plate.
In what units does the food arrive?
Yeah, what if they're giving you just a tiny amount and you don't know that?
I mean, you and I will spill soup on ourselves with full vision.
This just all seems very...
It's in a catastrophe waiting.
Well, anyway, that's what's happening tonight.
Oh, great. Okay. Wonderful.
I'm going to approximate it by blindfolding you.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Mm. It's going to be good.
Hey, if you want to hear us talk about food, you should join our Patreon at patreon.com.
Why are we talking about the Patreon?
Because
right
I
now?
Always forget at the end of the show until it's too late.
Forget.
So, well, I know,
you,
but
please,
but
you never
people
forget.
Are halfway tuning out. So I'm just going to say it now. patreon.com/linoleumknife, Linoleum Knife and Fork, LKTV, lots of other fun programming and eventing and all kinds of thinging. So better.
Did you say singing?
Thingings.
Thingings.
Yes.
All right. Sometimes they're singing.
Sometimes. Not any good.
But... Good. Well, speak for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a noted.
You can't even finish that sentence.
No. I'm a noted baritone.
Noted can mean a lot of things. Never let him sing here again is a note.
Oh. Listen, I sang in my youth group choir when I was a teenager at my church.
Were you the only one who's like...
Yes.
Yes.
That's why they wanted.
We go.
I could sing the low part,
uh-huh.
And then they needed it.
And, you know, since your church youth group was singing Elvira, you know, they needed you to come in to do the
giddy up, mow, mow.
Odd choice for a church youth group.
Every Sunday we sang Elvira.
I don't judge. I don't understand what the Protestants are up to.
Well, these Protestants were up to no good.
Yeah,
I will tell you that right now. They were. It was bad in the Amber Ruffin book.
Oh, the White Church chapter is the best.
When I got to that chapter,
oh,
the name of the chapter is White Church: The Worst Place on Earth.
You
and
nodded
I
a lot.
Didn't
I
didn't even get to the first sentence. I just read the title and I thought, yes, that's true. I know this. From first-hand experience.
You got their number.
Yeah. We have some movies to talk about.
We do.
Anyway, the garlic, just to keep the listeners in suspense,
uh-huh.
It's infusing in some olive oil right now on the counter.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be a nice. I'll tell you something. Garlic is very good for you.
It is, and delicious.
It helps your body do many things.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing it's good for is when you are in the same apartment with your spouse for 1 year,
uh-huh.
And no one is near you
to smell ever. You.
Yeah, no one else. You can smooch. You've been married 25 years. You can smooch each other on the face and be like, "Wasn't that dinner good? Taste all this garlic." Doesn't my kiss remind you of the delicious,
heart-healthy garlic
the meal that you just ate? That's what garlic is really good for.
Yeah, we've hit a year. I know we were a little earlier.
We were early adopters of isolation.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it just so happened that I was sick.
Yeah.
You had to take me to the Kaiser Urgent Care on March 6th,
yes.
2020. And they said I had a sinus infection.
We chose to believe them.
I did. It was the worst one of my life. It impaired my breathing for 3 days. It didn't frighten me because they weren't telling you, oh no, you might have this horrifying thing that could kill you. They just said, oh yeah, this is like sinusitis. Symptoms are very similar. We don't know. I'll never know what I had.
Sure.
But it was, you know, it was weird.
Yes.
And so by the time I got over it, it was like 2 weeks. That was when everyone else started being like, oh, I guess we have to go ransack the grocery stores now.
Yeah, we're about to get into a real interesting period of Facebook memories for those of you who look at those every day. Like, I just got my first, hand washing memes. Remember those?
No.
So, yeah, it's going to be a real fascinating trip down memory lane.
So, because I've put as much of it out of my mind as I possibly can. It's not just the podcasts that I forget the moment we finish.
Right. Whole years.
Talking them into a microphone. I just the day is done and my brain just wipes. I
your memento.
Yes. I wake up every morning and I look at you and I go, who's that?
And I have to hand you the Polaroids.
You married me. What?
Maya.
You're a dude. How did that happen? We're gonna talk about Boogie.
Yes.
We're going to talk about coming to America.
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk about Chaos Walking,
mm-hmm.
which I did not see, but you did.
Oh, did I ever.
We're going to talk about Raya and the Last Dragon, which I have not seen yet, but you have.
Uh-huh.
See, there's a difference. I'll never watch Chaos Walking.
And why would you?
Because I kept walking through the living room as you were looking at it, and each time I looked at the screen, someone was doing this. Blah! And I thought,
tell your chaos walking.
I don't have time. Don't have time for that. On the other hand, when I would walk through the living room while you were watching Raya and the Last Dragon, something would make me laugh or something looked really nice. And I thought to myself, oh, I got to see this one.
Yes. You
as
should.
Soon as they send us a Blu-ray, because I'm not paying $30 to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Because we already pay Disney Plus to have Disney Plus.
For the privilege of Disney Plus.
I'm not paying an extra $30. We did that with Mulan.
Yes.
And what else did we do that for?
That's it.
That's it. We did that with Mulan.
For Disney Plus.
And it was fine.
This is better than Mulan.
Well,
it's more worth $30 than Mulan.
I mean, yo, I hear it's really great.
Yeah, it is.
And I do want to see it. But I do also love $30.
Sure.
More.
You know, and look, if you have a family of four, let's say, $30 on Disney Plus, that's a real bargain compared to what you'd be spending at a movie theater.
Correct.
And who knows? Maybe you live somewhere where there are movie theaters, and you're one of those people that's like, we're going to a movie theater. Then they're probably showing Raya and the Last Dragon.
Right. Here's the other thing. I have a hunch that... Like, didn't you just read me some news article that said Los Angeles movie theaters are going to reopen in about a week or two?
They might open in the next week or two.
All right. by the time you and I get the vaccine and then get the second shot and then wait it out after the second shot for like, I think it's like a couple weeks after the second shot. And then they tell you
for maximum potency,
you're pretty okay.
Yeah.
Right. By the time that happens, it's going to be at least May, maybe even later, depending on when things happen for us. So I have a feeling that when the movie theaters reopen, it's going to be the greatest hits of 2020 to start up with.
Well, you know,
I think they're going to take whatever big movie came out in the past several months.
Sure.
They're going to book it. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, there's going to be that.
Maybe I have a chance to go to a movie theater to watch this sometime in the next few months.
There's going to be the stuff that went straight to streaming in 2020. Yeah. There's going to be whatever's nominated for Oscars, I'm sure, will be in there. And then you're going to have a few things like Quiet Place 2. They've already moved back up to like May. You know,
I'll tell you what I want to see on a big screen.
What's that?
Barb and Star.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because I would buy a ticket to see that.
On a big screen and with people. Like, obviously not a packed house because we're not doing that anymore, but just with some people.
Yes.
That would be great. I would be in for that.
We're talking about SpongeBob.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay.
So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is there anything else that you watched that you don't...
I think that's it.
No? Okay. All right. Well, why don't you start with Chaos Walking.
So, yeah, you know, you always talk about your bubble, like, you know...
It's true, I do, and I have one.
Dave White got to the end of Prometheus and was like, what? This is an alien movie?
I've lived in a bubble for the past year.
Indeed. I guess because I wasn't really paying attention because I'm not like a super fan of these actors or whatever, but I had missed the underlying drama of Chaos Walking, which is that it was originally completed in like 2017 or something. And then there was, as our friend in the industry likes to say, it's never reshoots. It's additional photography.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, apparently this movie went back and forth and has been sitting around for a while trying to get brought to a form that is releasable. I could not say if they ever got there, but I will say it's not a very good movie. It's a YA dystopia. We were all missing those. So Tom Holland lives on, it's like 2247 or something. Tom Holland lives on this new world colony. It's a different planet. And for some reason on this planet, the thoughts of men can be heard by other people. It's heard and seen, sort of swirling around their heads. It's a phenomenon known as noise. And where he lives, all the women were wiped out, I think by like aliens or something is what they're being told. And it's all being run by the mayor, who's played by Mads Mikkelsen. And then it turns out that there's a ship of other settlers coming, and there's a crash of the pod, and the only one who survives is Daisy Ridley. And so it's the first time that Tom Holland has ever seen a girl, and he keeps like the thoughts in his head keep saying like girl, 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 yellow hair, pretty girl.
Did you explain why there are no women? Was I not listening to you?
I said the story they've been told is that they were wiped out by aliens. All right. Or something, okay. But we come to find out later that's not quite true.
I see.
Anyway, so Mads Mikkelsen wants to get her and things and stuff, and so Tom Holland has to help her get to the other part of the planet where she can send a signal to the rest of the ship so they'll come get her. They run into a whole other colony that's run by Cynthia Erivo, and that's where he sort of finds out what the actual deal is with women. And this movie is just like a mess of things thrown together, and it's not ever very interesting. And you know, like, Tom Holland is being raised by Demian Bashir and Kurt Sutter, and those guys share a bed, but like there's never a moment of discussion about like what's actually going on there and what else is going on in this all male colony.
Situational homosexuality is what's going on.
Well, presumably, but no one, like the movie doesn't pause for 5 seconds to like delve into that at all.
All right.
Well,
that's what's happening.
Thank you. I could pretty much, I made my own inferences. Thank
I haven't
you.
Even watched this movie. That's what's happening.
Anyway, it's just a lot of running around and yelling. And the whole thing with the noise, they never come up with a particularly effective way to use that, either metaphorically or to move the story along. And it's, we talked about Cherry, right?
I forget. I think maybe we did.
Anyway, not a great month for Tom Holland movies.
Right.
You know, I think he's talented. I think he's got an adult career ahead of him, but
he is an adult.
You know what I mean.
He's like 25.
Yes, but he's still playing teenagers. I know. He's still famous for playing teenagers.
He's a
right
tiny
now.
Little yes, tiny little
a
person.
Wee bairn.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I hope the scripts get better for him because he deserves better material
right
than this. So yeah, that's really all you need to know about Chaos Walking. Although Mads Mikkelsen does wear this big sort of red fur coat that's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
And he
I saw him in it.
And he lives in this sort of like Swedish stilt house, like the sort of mid-century modern architecture.
Do we know that it's,
I don't know if it's actually Swedish, but it's the kind of thing you would think of when you think of like,
it looks like it's made out of a metallic bubble.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on stilt. It's very cool and hot pink.
Your house got legs. Knows how to use them.
Anyway, don't bother with Chaos Walking. And oh my gosh, if you live somewhere where it's showing in an IMAX theater, double don't bother with Chaos Walking.
It's going to be extra loud.
Yeah.
I did have to keep telling you to please turn down the volume because we have neighbors.
Mm. So. Well, that's the thing. Here's the thing. One of the things we don't talk about so much when we talk about watching these screeners at home, sometimes they have subtitles on them, you know, which, I mean, look, if you're premiering on HBO Max in 2 days, you're going to have subtitles then. Why not give them to us now? And when they do, it's very handy and it's great. And I can keep the TV down low. But when they don't have subtitles and you've got
that whispery talk,
the mumbly whispery, the modern way of acting, you have to crank it up for that. And then you have to turn it down because as soon as the music starts or like there's effects or whatever, it's very distracting.
On the other hand,
this has been a message from I'm old.
So moving on.
Yes, let's.
Let's talk about Boogie.
Yes.
It is the directorial debut of Eddie Wong.
Yes.
And if you don't know who he is, he's the guy who wrote the memoir Fresh Off the Boat that was turned into the sitcom Fresh mm-hmm. Off the Boat. You may have seen his Viceland TV show called Wong's World, which was pretty cool. I enjoyed it. And this is his first film. It is a narrative feature.
Does he own a restaurant in L.A.? Did I get that wrong?
Probably. Like, he does have restaurants. Okay. I'm forgetting now.
Gotcha. But he has multiple ones.
Okay. Yeah. It stars, this film, Taylor Takahashi.
Yes.
As a young high school student named Alfred Chin, nicknamed Boogie. And he is a basketball star in his school. And he transfers to another school so that he can be on a team that basketball scouts are looking at.
Yes.
His hope, in fact, his one shot at going to college is on a basketball scholarship.
Right.
And he really wants to be in the NBA. And he's very good.
Yes.
But he has teenage basketball star-ism. And he thinks he's too good for everybody and doesn't want to be a team player. He talks trash about his own team to them, to the coach. He has growing up to do and some maturing to do on this front. He meets a young lady in his AP English class. Oh, but by the way, the most disengaged group of kids in this AP English class that I've ever seen.
Like, this is apparently a high school where you don't get, you are put into AP whether you want to or not.
It would appear.
Because every AP class I ever took,
lethargic
everybody
kids
was elbowing their way into that class.
The teacher's like, okay, so we're going to talk about this thing. And blah, blah, blah. Anyone? It's like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Anyone?
Yeah.
Anyone? And they're all just like, man, we don't want to be here. I just found that, I found that amusing. Because I was like, it's an, oh, this is a, oh, this is AP. So he meets a young woman in his AP English class, Taylor Page, who has read the book. Yes. She's ready to talk about it in class.
Yes. And it's Catcher in the Rye, which usually if you do that in your own coming of age film, it's like, oh, stop it right now. But I will give Wong points. He finds interesting things to say about it.
Yeah, he finds his way through it. So he's got a young lady that he wants to get to know better. He has parents who do nothing but fight.
Yes.
And they have been at each other's throats since
he was born.
since she was pregnant with him. And yet they've stayed married. The father's been in and out of prison because he gets involved with, you know,
shady
crime people from time to time.
The dad really is pushing hard on the NBA yes. thing. The mother is more about college. The dad is like NBA, NBA, NBA.
Right. And meanwhile, there is a local basketball star whose name is Monk, and he is played by the late Pop Smoke, rapper that was murdered last year.
And yeah.
Exactly 1 year ago, February of
23?
He was 20.
20?
Wow. Yeah. Maybe 21, but still, like, it.
Crazy young.
Extremely young. Yeah, it's horrible all the way around. And this is a sports movie that you've seen a million times.
Yeah. With
moments that are completely engaging and real and feel like they should be in a different movie.
It's a really interesting movie about sort of generational, maybe not abuse, but certainly trauma, and about, you know, I think as a child of immigrants movie, it's really fascinating.
Yeah.
And then it keeps being about basketball in a way that is like every other basketball movie.
Right.
And it's like, can we go back to the fighting parents? They're a lot more interesting than this.
Here's what's great about this movie is all the human interaction.
Yes.
Hit Boogie with the parents.
With the girlfriend.
Boogie with the girlfriend.
With the friend, even.
With his best friend, who is played by...
Jorge from Love, Simon. Jorge Lindeborg Jr.
Okay, thank you. You know, with the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime anybody is talking about something other than basketball, which does take place a good 50% of the movie.
Yeah.
All of the human interactions, all of the interpersonal interactions here are they feel real and immediate and you know, very lived in. I love the courtship between Boogie and Eleanor. That's who Taylor Page yeah. plays.
Taylor Page, who's in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Have yes. you seen that?
Their courtship is great because they are getting to know each other over the course of the film and talking and talking and talking and talking and not just talking about how hot they think the other one is.
Right.
They're talking about life and they're talking about books and they're talking about everything.
Yeah. And when things do get physical, he's actually the kind of shy and awkward one and she has to sort of guide him.
They flip it on that. It's really a good teen movie in that way.
I think this is one of those cases where you have a first film from somebody who doesn't understand where their strengths lie, maybe, or doesn't
not exactly,
or is maybe a little afraid of them. I don't know. I think Eddie Wong thinks he's selling a movie about basketball, and
yes.
that's the draw. And he's actually a really good dramatist. He's
yes.
created really interesting characters. He's given them interesting dialogue when they talk to each other, and he could have just like stuck with that for the film, yep. and it would have been, I think, a better move.
I got distracted when it just became about the big game,
yeah.
or you've got to beat Monk, you know, and you've got to show
be a team player,
you've got to be a team player, all that stuff that you've seen again,
and
like
the college
said,
recruiters think you're
times.
Too much of a maverick. Or,
yeah. So it's 75% pretty good movie.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, worth looking at because of what's good about it.
I want to see what he does next.
Yeah, me too. And I want it not to be about sports.
Yes.
And I say this as not someone who dislikes sports movies at all, as we've said millions of times over the past 10 years. Boy, howdy, in real life do I hate sports, and I just do not care. But I love a sports movie because they're rousing, and they make me excited.
And it's all the good parts in 90 minutes.
Yeah, all the good parts of sports happen in the sports movie. But in this sports movie,
it's distracting from what is really interesting.
It fails to be the thing you want from a sports movie.
Yeah. Or it's just it's a thing you've seen in too many other sports movies.
Right, right. Pop Smoke, really good.
He is.
As this sort of, I wouldn't call him a villain necessarily, but he's
nemesis.
He's mean. He's a nemesis. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a sad.
He's got real presence. I think he could have.
I think it's one and only movie.
He could have built a screen career. It is tragic what happened.
All right. We don't have any advertisements this week.
Nope.
No sponsorship this week.
Free and unfettered.
We're going to move right along to Raya and the Last Dragon.
This space available.
Correct.
Okay.
Please discuss.
Raya and the Last Dragon, new cartoon from Disney, a new animated animated feature. Sorry. Not a musical and not a love story.
Yes.
Which is pretty bold for a Disney animated feature. And they carry it off quite well.
Is there singing in Brave?
Is there?
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Anyway, go on.
And I like Brave more than most. So this movie, I was really impressed with. I mean, I could try and summarize the plot for you, but I'd be here for 20 minutes. And that's actually a good thing.
Because I edited your review.
Yes, when I was writing it, you were like, too much.
I haven't written a review for anyone for money in the past year because I'm unemployed on that level. However, you are back to writing reviews for The Wrap, and now we're in this lopsided situation where we are not editing each other. I am just editing you.
Yes.
And when I read your first draft of this review, I said, dang, there's a lot of detail and story going on here. Chop it all out of this review. Give me the highlights.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, this movie does a lot of setup, a lot of world building, and it all works. Like, it moves at a good clip, and it all pays off, and it's interesting, and it doesn't just feel like... Usually in a movie like this, it feels like you're listening to the sister in The Happiest Season, who's trying to describe her science fiction epic or her fantasy epic.
Yes.
And everybody's like,
at the end you realize that she really had it all laid out.
Exactly.
In her head.
Yeah. But so in a nutshell, it's this mythical kingdom of Kumandra, and humans and dragons coexisted, and the dragons brought water and all these great things. And then this sort of horde / plague, I'm never quite clear what it is, comes through and turns people and dragons into stone. Seems like there's no way to stop them. Ultimately, this last batch of dragons bands together, and the last dragon uses their magic to, like, dispel these folks, and the magic all gets trapped inside of this gem. So the kingdom then splinters into 5 parts that are all named for parts of the dragon. It's like spine and heart and fang and claw and some tail, I think. And one of them holds the gemstone, but the other ones want it. Eventually, through some duplicity, somebody tries to steal it. It gets broken into pieces. The horde plague thing comes back. So Raya, who is the princess of heart and whose father has been turned to stone, sets out to get all the gem pieces back together again and to find Sisu, the last dragon, who's voiced by Awkwafina, to sort of fix everything and bring Kumandra back. Along the way, Raya, by the way, is voiced by Kelly Marie Tran.
Hang on, let's just. I'm going to read through the big names that you know in this voice cast.
Oh yeah, there's so many.
Sung Kang, Patty Harrison, Sandra Oh, Benedict Wong, Daniel Day Kim, Gemma Chan, Awkwafina, Kelly Marie Tran.
Yeah.
A lot of folks.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I will say this, another thing this movie has going for it, very often I find that Celebrity voices don't bring that much to animation. Like, it's a selling point, but, you know, they give me Billy West and June Foray. You know, like, give me the people who actually do this for a living over the famous folks. This is a really good voice cast.
Yeah.
They're all dynamite. And Awkwafina, I will say there's one moment when Awkwafina first appears. Up until that point, the movie has been pretty serious-ish, you know, and so suddenly you get this burst of Awkwafina, and you're like, whoa, that, where...
It's a burst of Awkwafina.
It is, you know, but as the longer she's in the movie sort of softens around her and accommodates her, so it doesn't feel like this, like it's been this serious, heavy kind of epic, and then suddenly, hey, Awkwafina's here with the jokes, you know.
Right.
It accommodates her, and it works out. So it's this quest thing and they meet people along the way. There's a kid who runs a boat, you know, that's also a restaurant. There's a con artist baby with three monkeys. There's a warrior, you know, and it all comes together really well. And yeah, I'm sure you could boil this down to like, oh, it's a video game plot. They have to go to the place and get the thing. But the characters are really interesting and they have an interesting, you know, interplay, going on between them. It's gorgeous. This is the first sort of Southeast Asian set Disney film, and you see a lot of different, like, they make the Five Kingdoms all very visually different, not right. just in sort of, you know, color palette, but terrain and other things.
Right. Written by Kiwan and Adele Lim, who she wrote Crazy Rich Asian.
Yes, yeah. yes. Did the adaptation.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's you know, probably the best. I can't remember what some of the other ones were, which should tell you something, but like non-Pixar Disney features, it's a very, very good one. And, you know, I think kids will dig it. And as an adult, I was kept very entertained. And I thought they did a really good job of, like I said, putting together this whole sort of backstory and world building to tell this movie. It's really well done.
I will see it.
And some really good fight choreography, too.
I will watch this.
Okay.
Maybe in a movie theater.
Ooh!
Promises. I'm not a gun jumper.
Oh, no.
At all.
No, no one would ever accuse you.
I'm oh so hesitant these days.
Yes.
To do anything.
somebody asked me on Facebook if we were gonna start going back to movie theaters after the vaccine, and I was like, we are not.
I'll give you my plan.
We're not even
who
there
wants
yet.
To know. I'll tell you it. Vaccines, a waiting period.
Mm-hmm.
Case numbers go down.
Yes.
And I mean down.
Yes.
Like, I'm on that CDC site every day.
ER's open back up.
It has become a part of my morning routine, along with weather.com and mm-hmm. the National Weather Service.
Gotta check both.
They're sometimes different. And
then who do you believe? Or do you split the difference?
I kind of split the difference.
I see.
You go to weather.com and that's the Weather Channel, and they are much more sensationalistic about what, you know.
About the weather.
They really are.
In Southern California.
I'm not kidding. They really are. Yeah.
Not another warm front.
Like, you go to the National Weather Service site and it's just the facts, ma'am. You go to weather.com, the Weather Channel, and the first thing that pops up is a video of a sinkhole that just ate a baby. Like, it's and you're like, what? Why it's morning? I don't want to see these hideous nature disasters. The
cumulus gone wild.
Yeah. So where was I? Oh, CDC site. In January, we were at like 4,000-ish deaths a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, according to the numbers, it was like 800.
Okay.
So it's going down.
Yeah.
But it's got to go down
much more.
Sure. I need to make sure that the information is coming in about, does the vaccine protect you against all these variants that are out there?
Mm.
All these trendy new variants.
Yes.
Because they're like, well, we think, you know, so I'm going to get that vaccine. I'm going to sit tight.
What you call "well, we think" is science unfolding as in real time.
Right. But in, as it's unfolding, I sit with my arms crossed until it unfolds.
That's
fully
fair enough. That's fair.
I'm not jumping back into the pool until someone says the water is really lovely.
Yeah.
It's warm. It'll make you happy. You'll float.
The lifeguard needs to do that thing where they put the drops of the chemicals in the little plastic container and shake it around, you know?
Yes. So the answer to, am I going to a movie theater? Eventually.
Yes.
But I've got some, I'm a very patient person. Furthermore, I have spent the past year sitting in this home, becoming much too comfortable being a hermit. And I mean, really, in a way that disturbs me. And so I am going to actually have to push myself.
Yeah.
We have been, as we've said many times, extremely lucky.
Yes, yes, yes.
That our jobs were already things that we did here at home, mm-hmm. for the most part. And the circumstances.
I used to go to places to podcast, and now I just do it here.
Right. We used to go to the radio station to be on the radio. Now we do it on Zoom. We used to go to Maximum Fun to do other podcasts. Now you do them here. You know, the guys in Deck the Hallmark are in Greenville,
South Carolina.
Whatever Carolina. That's South Carolina.
We're going to get letters. Don't you start with whatever Carolina.
I don't know the difference between the North Carolina and the South Carolina. I understand that they are different states.
Okay.
And I know that Greenville is in one of those states. Look, there's a Roswell, New Mexico, where I was a young person, uh-huh. and there's a Roswell, Georgia.
There is.
You see, there could be another Greenville in the other Carolina.
I think there actually might be.
You see my point.
But all the more important than to know which Carolina they're in. You could go to the wrong one entirely.
I could. Not trying to offend people in either Carolina. But I just did. So.
Yes.
We've been very lucky that our jobs get to be inside here.
Yes.
We don't have to go anywhere. And we live in a city that's big where deliveries are happening. And our friends who have to go out into the world, I worry for them every day. Thank God one of them just got, the grocery store employee just got vaccinated.
Phew.
The person who's on a TV show set has not yet been vaccinated. It makes me furious.
Yeah.
But we're lucky. We got to stay here. And because we got to stay here, my brain has broken. Mm. And I don't want to go back outside because going outside terrifies me.
I just feel like I'm gonna
have to push myself every day to re-enter society.
I'm gonna need a basic tutorial on human interaction because it's like the first time I go to like a function,
right,
like a party or something, it's gonna be weird.
You see all these faces of people whose names that you used to know. And you're like, I haven't looked at you or thought about you in a year.
Could you hold up your Instagram? That's how I know you now.
So, what were we talking about? Movie theaters.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not happening just yet.
No.
Well, not for us anyway.
One day. Yeah, someday.
Coming to America.
Yeah.
Was Coming to America destined for anywhere but Netflix?
Amazon. It was supposed to be in theaters.
Amazon, it was supposed to be in theaters.
It was supposed to be in theaters.
All right.
It was going to be a big whole thing. And then Paramount offloaded it to Amazon Prime.
This is a sequel to the 1987 Eddie Murphy hit.
Yes.
Big hit. Everybody saw Coming to America in 1988.
Yes.
Did you love Coming to America in 1988?
I did not.
I did.
I thought there was stuff about it that was funny. There were, you know, like Sexual Chocolate is funny, Soul Glow is funny, McDowell's is funny.
And they're all back.
Not so much Soul Glow. I think that finally, like, I think the idea of hair relaxer is so completely happening in 2020. Almost all of Coming to America is in Coming to America. And if they can't restage or retell a joke, they'll literally just roll the clip from the first movie.
Yeah.
So
Eddie Murphy, Prince Akeem.
Yes.
he has three daughters.
Yes.
And no one to deliver his kingdom to in the
which
as a legacy, because for some reason they live in a patriarchy.
Yes. Well, and this is such a Hallmark movie kind of thing. Like, oh, we can't pass on to a woman, even though I've been prince for these last 30 years with my daughters and haven't bothered to try and make this change.
And I'm the boss. I could fix this if I wanted to, right?
Also, and then also the movie, he's very obsessed about the whole, oh, I got to get an heir. And it's like, James Earl Jones is alive at the beginning of this movie. So you don't need an heir for a while, one would hope, long life to Prince Akeem.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why suddenly it becomes this thing, like, we have to fix this right now.
I'll tell you why. They had to come up with a story.
Well, they had 30 years to come up with a story, and this is what they came up with.
It doesn't matter. So, okay.
So now we find out that when Akeem and his pal Semi were in Queens in 1988, that, oops, there was one night where Semi hooks up with a lady. The lady had a friend, played by Leslie Jones, who was aggressive and blew a bunch of pot smoke on Akeem. And then he forgot the fact that he and she had an intimate evening together.
Yes.
So it turns out that he has a son after all.
Yes.
And that son is not super interesting, but he is going to be the focal point of this sequel. He's played by Jermaine Fowler. And so the son and Leslie Jones come back to Zamunda with Akeem. Obviously, Princess Lisa is not thrilled about any of this.
She is not.
She is played again by Sherry Headley, and it was lovely to see her again. And complications.
Lots of complications, lots of jokes, lots of things that are set up to be jokes that deliver on the jokes. Jokes that you know.
Yeah.
From the past.
Yeah, this is you. This whole movie could just be like a sing-along, because, like, you know all of it. There are sequels where they'll do the thing again, but they'll put a spin on it,
right,
or they'll reveal something behind it that you didn't know,
yes,
or they'll point out how ridiculous it was the first time and no one noticed it.
Yes.
Not this movie. This movie is just like, wasn't Coming to America great? Let's just do that again.
I gotta tell you, as an experience of couch sitting and then also table sitting to watch this film, I moved from the couch to the desk and then...
So you could multitask.
So I could multitask.
It's that kind of movie.
It is that kind of movie. It is a cozy experience.
Well, it's familiarity, sure.
In the same way that, you know, what have we been talking about lately? Oh, WandaVision is a show that is sort of metaphorically about the pandemic, in that you are retreating into the past, to the familiar, things that you loved in the past, things that made you laugh in the past. You and I are on the couch most nights during a week watching at least one episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show on Hulu.
True.
Because we just want to. It's just comforting. And this is a comforting, cozy comedy where no new ground is broken, where some new jokes are told, thanks to mostly Leslie Jones and Tracy Morgan. But the feeling is one of, you know, very warm familiarity. And I laughed. The jokes might be old, but I still laugh at them. I laughed at them again, and I laughed at the slightly new twist on them this time. And I gotta say, that's enough. That's plenty. That's all I needed. It's exactly what I wanted. It is...
But see, this isn't the Mary Tyler Moore Show. This is the TV movie Mary and Rhoda.
See, you are...
What this does have going for it,
all right,
is the costumes of Ruthie Carter.
Well, yes. Fantastic costumes.
Oh, man.
If I'm going to complain about anything,
okay,
it's the fact that Teyana Taylor is not allowed to display her comedic gifts.
No, nor because she has Wesley them. Snipes.
She's a singer, she's a dancer, and she's an actress. But when she's in a film, if you let her be funny, she's really, really funny.
Yeah.
And all she kind of does here is... be demure as the potential wife.
She's not about being demure. She's doing the same exact shtick that the demure arranged marriage fiance yes. of the first movie does.
Yes.
Like verbatim. It's crazy. And then you've got Wesley Snipes, who this was directed by Craig Brewer, who just did Dolomite Is My Name with Eddie yes. Murphy and with Wesley Snipes. Wesley Snipes is like walks away with that movie almost. He's so on another plane of existence.
I don't think
in
people
Dolomite
think about
name.
Wesley Snipes as a comic actor enough. Like, I did not like, and I'm going to just ruin the gaze with this, I did not like To Wong Fu when I
I'm
saw
not
it.
A big fan
in the 90s when I saw it, I thought, eh. But you know who's really funny in To Wong Fu?
Wesley Snipes.
And so I...
And but yeah. I mean, he's brilliant in Dolomite Is My Name. Like I was pushing him at LAFCA that year for supporting actor. I thought he was so great. And so I thought, oh, well, OK, at least when Wesley Snipes pops up on screen, something funny is going to happen.
Right.
He's doing kind of a funny like warlord voice, basically.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. He's mainly there as a plot thing to like right. to be the problem, you know, of the movie that has to be solved. Because of course, once again, the, you know, Hakim's son doesn't want the arranged marriage. He right. wants to right. fall in love. And it's like, oh, we've been down this road before.
And that did not bother me. Obviously, it bothered you. I just wanted the comfort of these jokes that I love and mm. that I and people on screen that I like, and I, you know, I had a good time.
I'm not
being a good film critic right
you're
now.
You're not.
I'm being a comfy, cozy person. Well, here, and that's how I feel about this film.
As part of my due diligence, yes. I rewatched Coming to America over the weekend. The first Coming to America before watching this one.
Yeah.
Maybe if I had walked into this movie not having freshly revisited the film, and it had right. been 33 years since I'd heard these jokes,
I think that might be
that
the case.
Might have helped.
Yeah, that might have helped.
But I did watch it, and it was like, oh, here we are. Again.
Well, you're just too demanding.
Maybe I'm just too demanding. Maybe I'm just like my father, too, or... No, too bold. Is that it?
Yes, too bold is the lyric.
Thank you. Sorry, I forgot.
Too or?
Too, comma, or. Maybe it's like my father, too, or maybe I'm just like my mother. Prince was always grammatical, even if he was spelling words as letters or numbers.
Cold rhymes with bold.
Oh.
Oh. SpongeBob.
Yes, the SpongeBob movie.
Sponge on the run.
You just watched this.
I did. It's really funny.
It is really funny.
Poseidon, the king of the sea, kidnaps Gary the snail because he wants to use him for skincare.
Yes.
SpongeBob and Patrick have to go chasing after Gary and find him and get him back from the evil King Poseidon.
Lost city of Atlantic City.
Yes. So they do that with the help of an automated
robot
named Otto,
also voiced by Awkwafina.
Awkwafina, there she is again. And they have to also enlist the assistance of, is he in the trailer?
Yes.
Okay. They also have to enlist the assistance of a sage tumbleweed named Sage.
Yes. Who is a sage.
Who is a sage. Played by Keanu Reeves. And I don't mean that Keanu Reeves is the voice of a cartoon sagebrush. I mean that the floating physical head of Keanu Reeves
lives inside of a tumbleweed.
Lives inside the tumbleweed. And talks to SpongeBob and Patrick throughout the entire film. And is telling them how dumb they are. Constantly. I don't know why I'm laughing just even discussing this, but I laugh like this for most of the film.
Yeah. I laughed very consistently, and neither of us watched the show. But
not with any consistency. If it's on, I'll look at it for 5 or 10 minutes and like, this show's really funny. Like, children are lucky to have had SpongeBob as a touchstone cartoon as they grow up. Like, we didn't have it. We were children in the '70s. And so, you know, it's a great show for kids.
Have you seen all the movies?
I've seen all the movies, and all the movies are hilarious and great.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a fan of the movies. The only part of this that I thought was a little creaky, there is a part towards the end where the friends have to show up and rescue SpongeBob and Patrick because Poseidon wants to execute them. And they all have these flashbacks to how they all met at summer camp.
Yeah, and it kind of lurches everything to a halt for a moment as they set up this.
Paramount Plus would like you to watch the new show, Camp Coral.
Yes.
Which is basically the Jim Henson SpongeBob Babies cartoon they've just shown.
Right.
They've just started. And so that kind of drags it down. It's like, oh, now it's a backdoor pilot. But
it's
apart
fine.
From that, and they get by reasonably quickly.
They're doing some brand building.
Yeah. Beyond that, I was howling with laughter from start to finish. I had a really good time. I think there's some visual ingenuity in this film.
Oh, it's lovely to look at.
The way they distinguish Bikini Bottom from Atlantic City from this like dream sequence in an old West town.
Danny Trejo shows up and Snoop Dogg.
Yes, Danny Trejo has a theme old song.
West, in the old West town, will you please sing Danny Trejo's theme song? El Diablo, El Diablo, El Diablo.
Very bad man. Maybe we're easy touches.
We're
on
7 years
know.
Old and we love SpongeBob.
Yeah.
So we don't care what you think.
It's really good. It is for expensive rental on streaming platforms.
Oh, how much?
Or that's like a $20 rental.
$20. Maybe you got some kids.
Get the free month of Paramount Plus.
Yeah, that's what we did.
We got the free month of Paramount Plus because we want to see the Real World reunion.
Yeah, but we're gonna have to pay for an extra month.
Yeah,
if we want to watch the whole show,
because they're dropping them weekly. They
currently
know
it's free though.
Yeah. So
get the free Paramount Plus trial situation.
Yeah.
You can watch this movie for free
and
then dump it.
Because frankly, there's not that much that's real. I mean, unless you really...
We're just here for the Real World Homecoming.
Unless you need a place to watch all of the old Star Treks or something, there's not a ton on Paramount Plus. It's super exciting. One of the things we do on our Patreon is called LKRX, where we do daily recommendations of things. And I picked, you know, 5 movies that people might want to watch on Paramount Plus. And I had to do some digging to get
them. Oh, really?
Yeah, frankly.
Oh.
It's not great. But maybe it'll pick up. You know, I'm sure they're just getting started.
Ordinary People's on there, I think.
Ordinary People is on there.
Was that one on your list?
No. Not that I don't like Ordinary People. I think it's been available before. I was trying to go for stuff that I hadn't seen in a lot of other places.
Buck never would have been in the hospital.
Give her the GD camera. they have Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, and Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown, Don't Come Back, but not Boy Named Charlie Brown or Snoopy Come Out.
Listen, the second two features don't get enough love.
Yeah.
I think they're both great. And I mean, they're not, all right, A Boy Named Charlie Brown and Snoopy Come Home are classics.
Yeah.
Like, they are the some of the greatest examples of melancholy children's cinema that you can imagine. The next two, Race for Your Life and Bon Voyage, are a lot more rollicking and overtly fun.
And upbeat.
But still, I still love them.
Sure, of course.
But yeah, they're not the stone cold
bummer
elementary school bummer that the other two are. And honestly, kids need to be sad sometimes.
Of
so
course.
Let's show make them watch these films.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's not my DVD recommendation of the week, but it could be.
Okay.
Both of them. A Boy Named Charlie Brown, Snoopy Come Home. We talked about this so many times. we even did an episode of Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife
about
Snoopy Come Home.
We did.
Yeah. What is your DVD pick of the week? We're done. We're finished talking about the current cinema.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I had not really thought about it. I'm a little early because it doesn't come out until next Tuesday, but I'm right. just going to go ahead and say Celine and Julie Go Boating on the Criterion Collection. I'm very excited. This is the first time that it's ever been released on Blu-ray in the United States. Like,
wow.
For the longest time, you had to get like a British one or something. But so I love this movie to pieces. We did a film and a movie episode about it last year with Peter DeBruge talking about Dan and Peter and I talked about Celine and Julie and Inception because they're both movies that are much of them are set within other people's dreams. But yeah, it is funny and smart and odd. And it is a 3-ish hour movie where you'll spend the first half baffled at
is
what's going
on. Is it a full 3 hours or is it almost 3 hours?
I forget.
It's
you could
long.
You could look. It's right there. You'll spend the first half scratching your head.
Too
can't
far.
Reach. The first half of it baffled by what's going on and the second half completely glued to it. So it's a great experience.
Yeah, it really is.
I envy all of you who will be seeing it for the first time.
It's one of my all-time favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mine is one that you and I just watched this past Saturday night.
Mm.
In about a week or so, or two, I guess. I don't know how long it takes between when you guys record this and when it actually drops, but...
Next week. Okay. On the 17th.
You do a podcast called A Film and a Movie.
Yes.
And you recently recorded an episode where you... Here's what happens on A Film and a Movie. On A Film and a Movie, it's Alonzo and Dan... Grumpy Dan
mm-hmm.
from Deck the Hallmark podcast, talking about an old film and then a less old film. A more recent one. And then how they are connected, how those two films are connected. Maybe one of them was, maybe the latter was super influenced by the former, or maybe there is just, you know, an unintentional, you know, way that they relate to one another. I saw Bringing Up Baby for the first time when I was in my 20s, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It was new to me at the time. And it stars it's Howard Hawks directed, yeah. Starring Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn. It's a screwball comedy where a wildly idiosyncratic woman upends the life of a studious
paleontologist.
Now, here's the weird part about this. When I was in my 20s and I saw Bringing Up Baby for the first time, it never occurred to me that one of my other all-time favorite films, What's Up, Doc, stole from Bringing Up Baby so relentlessly.
It's practically a remake.
It is. It really almost, I mean, spiritually, it is a remake.
Oh, for sure.
And there are so many things that happen in Bringing Up Baby that happen almost exactly the same way in What's Up, Doc, that it took me this viewing as a grown person
mm-hmm.
to finally be like, oh my God, wow. Like,
And Peter Bogdanovich would cop to all of
this. Oh, yeah. It's not like Peter Bogdanovich would have said, oh, no, we had nothing to do with taking every single beat from Bringing Up Baby and putting it into my film. But Bringing Up Baby is astonishingly funny and wild and weirdly romantic, even though in real life, if anyone ever did this kind of thing to you, you'd be like, I'm getting a restraining order.
Yeah.
You know, people are kidnapped and there are leopards running around and
throwing rocks at people's heads.
Yeah, throwing rocks at people's heads and stuff. But yeah, so my recommendation this week is Bringing Up Baby.
Mm.
If you've never seen it, you owe it to yourself to see it. And then turn right around and watch What's Up, Doc, because not only will you marvel at the similarities, but they're both standalone, astonishingly great comedies.
Yes. Can't go wrong with either, and they make a great pairing.
And what I just said is just a fraction of what you guys talked about on yes. the episode. So Watch these movies.
Tune in for that next
Go
week.
Listen to a film and a movie that Alonzo does with Dan, because it's a really good podcast. Thank you. I was on it. I was a guest once.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, and we want to recommend our good friend Tim Grierson has a new book out.
Yes.
And I can't see it from here, so I don't want to get the title wrong.
This Is How You Make a Movie.
Thank you.
Is the name of the book. And it's interviews with all kinds of filmmakers.
Yes, and discussions of craft, and like really kind of breaks down just all the elements, the visual elements and the sound elements and storytelling and all the things that go into making film as told by some of the greatest filmmakers who ever lived.
And the typeface on the front of the book is exactly the same kind of typeface that they used on all of the cereal boxes from Post in the late 1960s.
Yes.
It looks like a big box of Alphabits from 1968.
I endorse all of this. So yeah, pick up This Is How You Make a Movie wherever books are sold.
On the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a letter.
Do we?
We do.
I'll look it up now.
And it's a dilly.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Oh, hang on. Pause the recording so I can find it. Oh, it's brother. Not... Oh, here we go. Here we go. I got it.
Okay.
I got it. I got it. All right. B. This is from B.
Yes.
You'd read me chunks of this, but I don't think you'd read me the salutation. Dear most esteemed Elder Gaze.
We'll take it.
Look, I'm going to be 57 years old in June.
Mm.
So if that doesn't count for something as elder, if I don't qualify...
What's the point
yet? Even? Yeah. As my regular listening to your podcast had not begun until late 2019, though I'd been aware of you for much longer, I did not know or remember what Alonzo's issues with Chloe Zhao's The Rider were. To clarify, I became curious about this when you had your discussion of Nomadland, Zhao's latest film. While Alonzo found it to be quite successful, Dave was unsatisfied by its lack of interrogation into the political and/or economic background of how many, if not most, of the nomads had this life thrust upon them as opposed to choosing it. Alonzo responded by saying that the film showed these things, it just didn't say them out loud. And Dave responded to that by saying that it wasn't enough. I am paraphrasing here. I hope I'm not too far off base. No, that's pretty accurate. Much it. As you can imagine, so you can imagine my surprise when I went back and listened to your review of The Rider from April 2018, only to hear the following exchange. Dave. There is such a gorgeous use of physical landscape here to make you understand the attraction of staying in this place where you are also trapped, which is a weird way to live. You want to stay because you love the land so much and it's all around you. Meanwhile, you're also kind of stuck here because there's nothing else for you. So the one thing that forms the identity of the people in the film is rodeo. I know that you, Alonzo, were hoping for more of an explicit discussion of the political and economic ramifications of life on a reservation, and the why of it, and the historical, Alonzo says, the context of it, and Dave says, but I feel that the movie gives you this, it shows you this, it doesn't tell you, it shows you.
How dare you come to us with receipts,
baby? B continues. Now, I do not in any way want to use this as a gotcha moment. Oh, is that so?
Mm-hmm.
Though it is admittedly quite amusing that you can replace the words rodeo and a reservation from that excerpt with nomadic lifestyle and the road. It would be almost the exact same as your discussion of Nomadland, except that you have switched positions. Having seen both films recently myself, they do present as very similar films with very similar goals and form an almost perfect trilogy in terms of a thematic through line when combined with Songs My Brothers Taught Me. Zhao's modern Western trilogy would make for a very neat Criterion box set and one that I would definitely save up for. So I guess I've got a question. Why does The Rider work, not work, when Nomadland does, not does? And where is the ethical line with showing instead of telling?
I don't know. I've been... Ever since we got this, I've been kicking this around in my head, and here's the best I can come up with.
Okay, do it.
In the same way where when a film is engaging you on one level, you don't sit there and ask questions about, oh, well, why is there a detective at this country house? You know,
right.
Like if other things are going on, you don't get bogged down in the nitty gritty. But then if you aren't engaged and entertained, your mind starts going to, hey, why is there a detective in this country house? You know, so I think that part of my thing with The Rider was because it wasn't grabbing me on a certain level, I felt like what it was missing was more of this kind of, you know, world explicating and context,
right.
And you know, sort of political information.
Right.
And because Nomadland did grab me on the more lyrical level that I think Zhao is trying to achieve, then it didn't bother me that she didn't stop to include all that other stuff. I'm not going to speak for you that the opposite is true, but that was my experience.
Last time Manola was on the show, she talked about the conditions of viewership.
Mm-hmm.
And how they are something that we don't often discuss.
True.
Very, very much, particularly as critics, where
you don't want to make it about you.
You don't want to make it about you, but the fact is that there is no such thing as objective film criticism.
Well, that's the point.
Every film critic brings themselves to the viewing.
Sure.
And what I brought of myself to the viewing of The Rider was the position of being a complete outsider.
Hmm.
Right? So I'm trusting The Rider to give me what it gives me. I'm trusting The Rider to tell me what I don't know, because I don't know. I'm not a Native American. I'm not living on a reservation. I've never been to, you know, the states that are in the northern, you know, center of the United States.
You cannot ride a horse.
I cannot ride a horse. I did once. It was not fun. I've never, you know, participated in rodeo. I'm letting this movie tell me, as a total outsider, mm-hmm. what it needs to tell me, and I trusted it. On that level, I got what I thought I was supposed to get. If you've listened to this show long enough, you've heard me talk about my weird childhood, which was itself occasionally nomadic. And so, and it wasn't by choice. And so,
I see where this is going.
So, my life experience of, you know, forced moving around,
poverty,
and this is all, you know, stuff that happened to me when I was a kid. My life experience of that formed my worldview about, you know, issues of justice, of, you know, economics, of
life choices.
Of life choices, you know. And I had two feelings watching Nomadland. One was my own personal, you know, anxieties involved. The anxiety of, it just seems like having a nice house with a roof and a bed would be better. You know, soft. It's a softer bed. It's a stable life. Like, grow up in an unstable situation, and you crave roots and stability, and you'll cling to them even in the face of them not being right for you. You know what I mean? So
the little girl in Tumbleweeds who buys copies of Better Homes and Gardens.
Uh-huh, exactly. That's another movie that got me on that level.
Yeah.
When that little girl buys the copy of Better Homes and Gardens in the convenience store, she's like 10, I thought, oh, I did that. Literally did that. And I'm using the word literally correctly here. I literally did that. So when I see Nomadland, and over the course of the film, I see Frances McDormand, her character, choosing a nomadic lifestyle to make her grief more manageable. I'm reacting to it anxiously. as a no, I want to grieve in a house with a nice bed and a roof and a toilet and, you know. Meanwhile, my grown 56-year-old man ideas about economic justice in the United States and the lack of it that we have makes me want a movie that is far stronger and louder and more
accusatory,
preachy and accusatory than what I got. And I'm not going to get that from Chloe Zhao, and I don't blame her for that.
Sure.
Like, she's not, that's not what she does.
Yeah.
You know, you want that, you watch a Mike Lee film.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, not Mike Lee. You watch a
Ken Loach.
Ken Loach film. Sometimes Mike Lee. But Ken Loach for sure.
Yeah.
So I brought myself to Nomadland, and I brought some pretty strong opinions about how rich people are destroying all of us. And when I didn't get what I wanted, I was like, So is Nomadland a better film than I experienced? Certainly. It absolutely is. But I brought that stuff to it and couldn't get away from it. You know, I was not distant from it enough. I'm not an outsider to, you know, some of the things that happened in this film. And so when I didn't hear it the way I wanted to hear it, the way I thought, the, you know, tell it to the people in the back, is that's the Twitter, you know, right, thing that goes around. That's what I wanted from Nomadland.
I think, weirdly enough, for me, another thing that separates the two films is that, you know, Brady Jandro in The Rider is playing this version of himself.
Yes.
And has endured things that the character has endured.
Yes.
Whereas, like, Frances McDormand, as good as her performance is always Frances McDormand.
Yes.
And so I think that...
And she's the best actor that we have for this thing.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, she's a fictional character played by an actress.
Yeah. So I think, so even though there are like real people in Nomadland playing versions of themselves, with The Rider, I felt like it was skirting so close to being quasi-documentary that I then wanted all that other stuff to sort of bolster what we were looking at and why and how.
Yeah.
And with Nomadland, I was maybe more able to embrace it as a narrative that is set among real world concerns because I've got her and David Strathairn in there.
Right.
And
I still want to watch the first one, which neither of us have
seen. Neither of us have seen it. We need to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
But that's a great question, B.
Thank you for the letter.
Please, listeners, don't go back and listen to our old shows and throw them in our face because we have no defense for anything.
I just want to thank B for not yelling at us.
That, yes.
Not that you've ever yelled at us, but you know what? I'm very delicate.
It's always, we always appreciate the not being yelled at. So, all righty. Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Check out my other podcast, as we've mentioned already, and check out our friends on the internet. Go see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast, The Criterion Cast. Did I say Fat Guys of the Movies?
I think you did.
Okay. And Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review there, and we'll read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean, etc., etc. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Go see what he's up to over at his Twitter, Blutopia, BLEUTOPIA. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, again, check out our Patreon. And next week we'll be back with more, and not this late in the week, we promise.
Right. No, see, we didn't explain why we were late.
No.
We're late. I spent all day on the phone yesterday with Bank of America.
Yes.
Everything's fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
I was on hold. I was on hold for a very long time.
That awful hold music.
They play you that hold music to make you hang up.
Speaking of Ken
Loach, they don't
Loach,
want to talk to you.
We need to be like I, Daniel Blake, and go yeah. like graffiti on the wall at Bank of America. Your hold music is the worst.
The greatest part was that when I finally got through and got a human being, I said, so there's a problem on the site right now, and I can't click through this thing. And she said, oh, yeah, we're having technical difficulties.
You waited 45 minutes
for that.
I said,
y'all could have made a recording. Told me that. Maybe. I don't know.
Yikes. All right. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves and each other. Until next time.
Goodbye.